Today we have a special episode of The Great Indoors coming at you. It's not special because it's like exciting or a big deal. It's special because it's unique. It's an unusual format for us and the show, but we think it's worth doing a special episode for this. We invite you to leave us a review, or comments, or share this on your social media if you like it. Send it to a friend who you might think would be into the show. So without further ado, thanks for tuning in. Here we go. Hey, listeners. Thanks again for tuning in to The Great Indoors. Welcome to today's mini episode. We've had the idea to do this for a little while, and we actually have really been struggling with how to share this or why we would share. So if you've been listening to our recent episodes, we've been mentioning Ecuador a few times as something that we'd be featuring at some point. And so we're going to do that today. As of today, Ecuador has reported 3,334 deaths and 38,571 cases of coronavirus, COVID-19. The New York Times estimates that these numbers could be 15 times lower than the actual counts, and this is thousands of unreported cases. The virus has primarily affected the poor, who are unable to shelter in place due to the prevalence of near subsistence living. There's a bit of irony in that because in Ecuador, the virus is considered to be a disease of the affluent in that it was introduced by affluent citizens who brought the virus home from travels abroad. A luxury that not many there get to indulge in. So it wasn't long before the healthcare system in Guayaquil all but collapsed. People were being turned away by security guards at hospitals because there's no room to treat people. On top of that, bodies of victims were being stacked in hospital washrooms and other spare space because the morgue was literally overflowing with bodies. Families have been receiving cardboard boxes as coffins from local cardboard manufacturers who are donating about 600 boxes a day in some cases. Prior to that, some families would keep the body of their loved ones at home until the smell was just unbearable, and then they would have to abandon the corpse in the streets. There's videos online of people digging graves in random fields for family members. There's one I found of a kid, maybe 12 years old, telling a reporter that his cousin had died 4 days ago and the police still had not responded to the call. This is like happening all over. During the early stages of the pandemic, Ecuador got hit really hard by COVID. Although the worst of the initial hit seems to have subsided, things are still really challenging, with the most recent news being about clashes between police and protesters in Guayaquil. Ecuador's second largest city is Guayaquil, and is very poor. There's a lot of poor people there. And I should say the protests there are not related to the protests erupting across the United States and Canada, which are due to racism and violence against people of color by police and the state. The protests in Guayaquil are actually related to the prevalence of missing bodies in the wake of COVID. So the scale of this particular protest is actually quite small compared to what we're seeing in the States, but it resulted in police beating about 40 or so protesters with their clubs. These are nonviolent protesters, by the way. So bodies of people's loved ones are just missing. They've been sent to shipping containers that are acting as temporary morgues, but the overwhelming nature of the virus unfolding in Ecuador basically just caused the circumvention of any kind of helpful paper trail. So I found at least three stories online of individuals who are having to look at hundreds of corpses trying to find their mother or father. One guy is trying to locate his dad based on a scar from his heart surgery. And he's decomposing, as many others are. Another recent piece of news out of Ecuador is coming out of the Amazon rainforest. It's still home to indigenous communities like Quechua and Sikope. And as of today, there are 185 cases confirmed coronavirus in these communities. So the disease has moved from China to Europe to Spain, where it's thought to have been picked up by a woman before she returned home to Ecuador. And now indigenous people in the rainforest have it. So why are we talking about this? How did we get onto this? Last year, my mom visited a friend in Ecuador, And kind of right as we started this podcast, we thought it'd be worthwhile to hear from people in other places about the pandemic. And we have a statement from my mom's friend's daughter. Her name's Pamela Montaño Paez. And her and I emailed back and forth a little bit, and she decided that she would prefer to have us read a statement from her rather than have her on the air, as it were. So she wanted to make sure her English was good enough, and she thought writing it out would be the best option for her. So in lieu of an interview with Pamela, Katina is going to read Pamela's statement for you momentarily. Following the statement, it's about a couple pages long, so following this, we're going to take a minute just to sit in silence, just to let this sink in, and we'll check in before we sign off. So, here's Katina.
I'm reading a statement from Pamela, who lives in Ecuador. My name is Pamela. I'm Ecuadorian. I'm 32 years old. I have a degree in psychology, and I work in a public institution in my country. Besides, I own a cafeteria together with my mother, a place where we worked 5 days a week after office. In Ecuador, we watched the news and heard about a virus that had started in China, which was serious, and that several countries in Asia and Europe were beginning to register infections. I believe we thought that Ecuador was very far from these places, that this disease would not reach us, and if it ever came, until then, a vaccine would have been found. But it turned out that it reached us because of an Ecuadorian lady residing in Spain who came to spend a vacation with her family, who had no symptoms when she arrived. But with the passing of days, her health declined, and medical examinations diagnosed her with coronavirus. When I heard from the news that Ecuador had its first case, I cried. I knew it was serious because Ecuador was not going to be ready to face such a situation. If countries as developed as China and Italy were collapsing, what would happen to our small country with not so advanced medicine that was already going through an economic crisis? Little by little, the cases began to increase and protection measures began to be applied at the national level, such as the use of masks and gloves at work and the suspension of social and religious events. About 20 days after the first detected case, the international borders were closed. Work activities were completely suspended, and we went into quarantine. All activities were suspended with the exception of banks, pharmacies, and supermarkets. Many public and private companies are doing teleworking or video calls, as is the case of my institution. Every day we receive certain activities by email, and weekly we report the work done to continue receiving our salary. But unfortunately, my cafeteria is not working, and that is affecting me financially, since my main salary is not enough to pay my student credit and other debts and monthly expenses. I have a 10-year-old daughter. Her classes were suspended a week before my work. At first, we took this quarantine with a positive attitude, I could say. It felt like a vacation that I used to do things at home that we normally wouldn't have time to do before, like cooking different recipes that she saw on the internet, cleaning the house, drawing, watching movies, and helping my daughter with the tasks from school that are also sent to her online. People could go out until 7 at night if we had to go buy food or medicine. Cars could be mobilized without restriction until this situation in Guayaquil, one of the main cities in this country, began to report an exaggerated number of infections, and then each province began to report more cases. It was then that the government ordered a curfew starting at 2 in the afternoon. The borders between provinces have restricted access. Cars can only move once a week according to the last plate number, and now food purchases, paperwork, and payments at banks can only be done based on people's last ID number. It is no longer so nice to be home all day. I have lost the desire to cook a little. I got bored with drawing. I clean the basics at home. My daughter denies the amount of homework she has because the school year will end at home. But we know that we should be grateful to God because we are healthy and we lack nothing. While we see that in Guayaquil, tens of people die every day. The health system is collapsed. There are no beds in hospitals. The sick are lying on the floor. Others die in their houses, and there are no ambulances to pick them up. So families have gone as far as burning the bodies on the streets or leaving them in plastic sheets on benches. Funeral homes no longer have coffins, so the government is giving people cardboard boxes for their deceased. There's no place to bury that quantity of dead people, so mass graves are being considered. The situation in Guayaquil is really a nightmare, and the rest of the country finds out about what is happening only on social networks because the news does not tell the whole truth. I live in one of the provinces with the lowest number of infections nationwide. Today we have 8 people infected, while in Guayas there are 5,754. If you ask me why there is such a difference in quantities, I would say that it is because of Guayaquil's way of life. In the coastal region, there is quite a lot of poverty. Most people are merchants. They live off of what they sell every day. If they don't work, they don't eat. They need to go out to work to bring at least a piece of bread for their children. There are also many families made up of 8 to 10 members who live in small cane houses on dirty mats that, with the heat of the region, give off bad smells, which is why people cannot bear to stay indoors. The pandemic in this country is felt differently to a certain extent depending on the economic situation, since some have money to be locked up at home without working for up to 6 months if necessary. Others like me have just enough because we continue to receive a salary, while others have nothing to eat. The government has made certain decrees so that basic services are not cut off. The banks do not charge us interest if we do not pay the credits on time. People who enter a certain poverty range are being given a bonus of $60 and baskets with first need products. But the country is not producing while the government needs income. So it is considering asking the public servants for a percentage of monthly money based on our income, or if a more drastic decision is reached, to pay us only half of our salaries. Knowing that far from the situation improving, the economic crisis will worsen, so my mom and I have started to offer food delivery through social networks. For food delivery, there are no restrictions on mobilization as long as we show a safe conduit justifying the activity we are doing. We know that going out to make deliveries involves a risk, but for necessity, we have to do it. So we try to take all the necessary security measures. Until now, thanks to God and my family, we have not had any infections with the virus. We have a job. We do not lack food. We give thanks for that. But we feel the pain of many Ecuadorian and worldwide brothers go through. We pray for the sick, for their families, for the doctors and nurses, for our authorities to make the best decisions, for the prompt creation of a vaccine, and for us, if we have to become infected at some point, God give us the strength to overcome it. I think that Ecuadorians, as well as people around the world with this disease, have learned that we are vulnerable beings, that we do not have a purchased life, that things that are priceless are worth more, that we should give more importance to what we used to have, that we did not appreciate, and that now we miss. Simple things like a hug or wonderful privileges like freedom or life itself.
Please take a minute to reflect with us. So we sat on this statement for a bit because we weren't sure what the format would be where we could present it. But we wanted to honor Pamela's voice by sharing this and maybe bringing some perspective to how destructive the virus can be. I've been thinking of the protesters who are being seen and heard right now, and it feels like all of a sudden we forgot about coronavirus. But if what we've been told about the ability for the virus to spread is accurate, there's a major likelihood that we'll see an aggressive second wave as an outcome of these massive gatherings. I'm not blaming or shaming those choosing to demonstrate, but I do hope for a better outcome than the worst case scenario in all this. There's a lot of news that can make us feel powerless. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, call someone and tell them about it. Let yourself be supported, even if it's from afar. You might find the words of Briar Culbert helpful. We interviewed her a couple months back, and you can find a couple episodes with her name on them. It's not a shameless plug, that's advice. Find voices of support in friends and professionals that can help you navigate this time if you need it. Thanks for listening. We hope you're safe, and we hope you're well. Take care.